This is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty. Both Canada and the United States have expressed optimism about reaching a new trade deal by a Friday deadline. Those talks continued through the night here in Washington. President Donald Trump said he believes they're going well.
I think Canada very much wants to make the deal, and I think it's going to be obviously very good for Canada if they do, and I think it's probably not going to be good at all if they don't. We have a very good relationship. They came yesterday to the White House, and we negotiated late into the evening. They're in the White House right now. We're negotiating with them right now, and they want to be a part of the deal. And we gave till Friday, and I think we're probably on track. We'll see what happens. But in any event, things are working out very well.
Foreign Affairs Minister Chrystia Freeland, leading the Canadian team, said the talks are at an intense moment, but there is a lot of goodwill on both sides.
Both parties are coming to this stage of the negotiation with a lot of goodwill. Certainly that is what Canada is bringing to the table. We understand each other's positions and what both sides need very, very well. What we've always said is, speaking for Canada, we're looking to stand up for our national interest, and we're looking to find compromises that are a win-win for all sides.
Mr. Trump set a Friday deadline so Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto can sign it before leaving office in November. Human remains of massacred tribes people were handed over to a delegation from Namibia by Germany at a church ceremony Wednesday in Berlin. Ernst Gassamub is a Lutheran church bishop from Namibia.
The Namibian and German history was born out of a very bad experience and reality.
Germany has acknowledged moral responsibility for the killings of the indigenous Herero people in the early 20th century and is in talks in a legal battle over an official apology. This is VOA News. The U.S. is expressing growing alarm over a pending assault by pro-government forces in Syria on the last remaining major rebel stronghold in northwest Idlib province. Heather Nauert is a U.S. spokesperson.
What we are concerned about is not just a potential chemical weapons attack, but we're concerned about the threat, any kind of escalation of violence in Idlib. That would put civilians and civilian infrastructure in Idlib at risk.
An estimated 700,000 more Syrians could be made homeless as a result of any assault on the province that borders Turkey. Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif held talks with Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, with Syria high on the agenda. He took aim at U.S. tariffs on Turkish aluminum and steel, denouncing America as an untrustworthy partner. Both Iran and Turkey have been on opposing sides in the Syrian conflict. The Turkish currency, the lira, Wednesday fell to its lowest level against the dollar in 2 weeks after the credit rating agency Moody's downgraded the standing of 20 Turkish financial institutions. The lira has lost over 40% of its value this year. Turkey's finance minister was quoted as saying he does not expect a big risk to the economy or financial system. The director general of the World Health Organization said the number of Ebola cases in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo is declining.
The number of cases we see now is on the decline. But still, because of the inaccessible areas we have, and we have some contacts already in those areas, we cannot be sure that we don't have any cases in those inaccessible areas.
Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus said some areas of outbreak are off-limits due to conflict. Nearly a month after the outbreak was declared, more than 100 confirmed and probable cases have been identified in North Kivu and Ituri provinces. 75 have died. Kenya's High Court Wednesday temporarily halted criminal proceedings against the Deputy Chief Justice, who had been arrested on corruption charges. The lawyers for Philomena Mwilu have filed a constitutional challenge, insisting this was a way to remove her from office. Mwilu was one of the justices voting to annul President Uhuru Kenyatta's election win last August, forcing a new vote. Newly inaugurated Zimbabwean President Emmerson Mnangagwa Wednesday named a commission to investigate the deaths of six people in post-election violence. The army clashed with opposition protesters opposed to last month's election result they claim was rigged. The U.S. economy's second quarter performance was revised upward Wednesday. The new growth figure between April and June now at 4.2%, the best showing in nearly 4 years. Stocks continue a mini rally Wednesday amid investor optimism about a new U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade deal. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
Morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, August 30th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Zimbabwe's president names a former South African head of state to lead a commission of inquiry into post-election violence.
I will say to you, if you have any evidence of all what you are saying, give it to the commission. Everything must be transparent, and the report will be produced and published.
Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa of Zimbabwe, lawyers for arrested Kenyan Deputy Chief Justice, says the public prosecutor has no authority to bring alleged corruption charges against her. Senegalese women protest against domestic violence. ECOWAS Parliament meets in Liberia's capital to tackle illegal migration. And supporters of Jean-Pierre Bemba demand his inclusion in DRC's December election.
We don't want the violence, because if we use the way of the violence, they will say that, you see, Mr. Bemba was in the jail, now he came again in Congo with violence. We have to wait for the last decision of the court.
That's political analyst Untunyoma Rukumbuzi. The UNHCR says millions of refugee children are out of school, and there are concerns over forced repatriation of Burundian refugees. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa on Wednesday appointed former interim South African President Halima Molante as head of seven-member commission of inquiry to look into the deaths of at least seven opposition post-election protesters. They were demanding the release of the July 30th election results when the army allegedly used live ammunition to disperse the protesters. But as Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, the opposition MDC says the inquiry might be just a window dressing.
President Emmerson Mnangagwa said late Wednesday he hoped that the commission's findings would be deemed credible. Many observers say the army used live ammunition against opposition supporters on August 1st, protesting and accusing the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission of deliberately delaying announcing results of the July 30th polls. President Mnangagwa said anyone with evidence of the army killing protesters should turn it over to the Commission of Inquiry.
I will say to you, if you have any evidence of all what you are saying, give it to the Commission. Everything must be transparent. This is happening in the glare of international media, who would want the investigation again to be done in the same manner, and the report will be produced and published. The culprits will be dealt with. We don't want to deal it privately, it's just suggesting.
President Emmerson Mnangagwa said the Halima Montlande-led commission will be sworn in once he returns from his trip to China next week. He did not indicate the time frame within which the commission is expected to finish its work. Other members of the former interim South African president Halima Montlande-led commission are from the United Kingdom, Nigeria, Tanzania, and the three Zimbabwean nationals. Tabita Kumalo, the spokeswoman for Zimbabwe's main opposition party, the Movement for Democratic Change Alliance, said this about the Commission of Inquiry.
We commend the bringing in of this inquiry, but what is critical is that as Zimbabweans, we must know that most of these inquiries are only done as a smokescreen to manage the disgruntlement, to please the so-called maybe diplomatic cause. But at the end of the day, there's never been any justice. Because this is not the first time that people are killed by the state, and the killers are never brought to book.
Under Robert Mugabe's almost 38-year rule, which ended last November, a commission of inquiry into deaths of an estimated 20,000 in the 1980s by a North Korea-trained army brigade in southwest of Zimbabwe was never published. Columbus Mavunga for VOA's Daybreak Africa, Harare.
In the Democratic Republic of Congo, supporters of former Vice President Jean-Pierre Bemba are demanding his inclusion on the ballot for the December 23rd presidential election. The Elections Commission disqualified Bemba because of his past conviction by the International Criminal Court, which was later overturned. Some analysts predict trouble ahead if his supporters perceive him to be targeted by the country's political system. Mohamed Yusuf reports.
The main opposition party, the Movement of the Liberation of the Congo, led by Jean-Pierre Bemba, is fighting to keep its candidate in the presidential race. Congo's Electoral Commission disqualified Bemba because of his 2016 conviction by the International Criminal Court. The court said Bemba, a former Congolese vice president, was responsible for war crimes committed by his militia in the Central African Republic. But in June, the court overturned the conviction and released Bemba from prison. His party argues that the ICC case is now over and that Bemba should be allowed on the ballot. Political commentator Delphine Kapaya says the way the court handles the case will determine the reaction of Bemba's supporters. There can be a problem because he enjoys a lot of support. If he is disqualified and it is seen he has been barred in accordance with the law, then there will be calm. But if it is seen that he is disqualified because of politics, then his party and his supporters will not accept that. Then that will be the beginning of troubles. Congo's highest court is expected to issue a ruling on Bemba's candidacy on September 19th. Researcher and political analyst Ntayoma Rukumbuzi says the court's decision will impact the next president, whoever is elected.
The Constitution Court may still overrule the Electoral Commission decision. But in case he doesn't run, the Constitution Court consider him as not qualified, I think it affects the legitimacy at some point.
For decades, DRC politics has been characterized by violence, coups and rights abuses committed by those in power. Human Rights Watch has accused the government of restricting the movement of opposition leaders and supporters. The MLC's Secretary General, Eva Baziaba, says her party is not ready for violence with its political opponents.
We don't want the violence because if we use the way of the violence, they will say that, you see, Mr. Bemba was in the jail, now he's free, he came again in Congo with violence. We say that we have to wait for the last decision of the court. And we hope that everything will be fine because we need the free fair election.
After many months of tension, President Joseph Kabila recently agreed to step down after 17 years in power. Kabila defeated Bemba in the 2006 election. He has now thrown his support behind close ally Emmanuel Ramazani Shadary. Mohamed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
Kenya's Director of Public Prosecution, Nordin Haji, was dealt a blow on Wednesday in his attempt to bring alleged corruption charges against Deputy Chief Justice Philomena Mwilu. Anti-corruption court judge Chacha Mwita adjourned criminal proceedings on Wednesday against Justice Mwilu to today, Friday. Among Mwilu's high-powered lawyers is former Kenyan Vice President Kalonzo Musyoka. Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi.
Justice Mwilu's lawyers argued before High Court that the prosecutor Nordin Haji's allegations were malicious and that he had no powers to arrest her. They contested that her alleged immodesty while handling Imperial Bank cases is purely a commercial matter and not a criminal offense. Senior Counsel Senator James Orengo argued that accusations against Justice Mwilu about the bank was purely a commercial transaction, which were concluded.
This matter, Your Honor, not only affects the independence of the judiciary, it also impinges on the independence of the bar. There are those who would like to get at the Deputy Chief Justice. I do not want to speak about that. It has been mentioned here. But my client, Your Honor, has no dog in that war. An unnecessary plea is an unnecessary burden.
Justice Mwilu is being represented by more than 30 lawyers, including former Vice President Kalonzo Musyoka. She's set to appear again in Magistrate Court tomorrow, Friday, after Chief Magistrate Lawrence Mugambe declined to halt her prosecution. Mugambe said he had directed fresh orders from the High Court.
Let's not get into so much of this. Let's agree that proceedings are adjourned to give the High Court the opportunity to put the record straight with regard to the apparent flaws in the order that has just been served on the court. Accused person shall, be, in the meantime, maintain same bail terms. Until then, mention on Friday at 11 a.m.
On the other hand, former Vice President Musyoka says the move to arrest Justice Mwilu stains the Supreme Court and that integrity of the judiciary must be upheld.
You're dealing with the person of the next in command of the entire judicial system. And therefore, I wish to add that giving this matter time is not an act of indecision on your part, Your Honor, but a recognition of the critical importance of this whole issue. While all of us accept that the fight against corruption is important, indeed is timely, but we cannot take that as a panacea to literally roughshod rights of important state officers.
Chief Justice David Maraga has admitted being informed much earlier about the arrest of his deputy, even though he failed to answer critical questions from journalists.
She's the person who has been performing the position of the judiciary ombudsperson. At that, I don't want to comment on matters that are in court. No.
Mwilu is being accused of abuse of office, tax evasion, and contribution towards the collapse of Imperial Bank of Kenya, which is currently under receivership. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, August 30th. Let's send a special good morning to listeners on all our VOA affiliate stations. Daybreak Africa time is 16 and a half minutes past the hour. The UN Refugee Agency says 4 million refugee children are missing out on an education, a situation that the body says portends ill for their future and the well-being of the communities in which they live. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva, where the UNHCR launched a new report entitled Turn the Tide, Refugee Education in Crisis.
The UN Refugee Agency reports enrollment of refugee children in school is not keeping pace with the growing refugee population, which has reached unprecedented levels. Globally, the UNHCR cares for nearly 20 million refugees, and more than one half are children. This means the number of refugee children needing to go to school also has risen, but this is not happening. UNHCR Senior Education Advisor Ita Shee says 61% of refugee children are attending primary school, dropping dramatically to 23% for secondary school. This, she underscores, is compared with 84% of children globally.
So if we put those figures together, we know that a refugee child is five times more likely than any other child not to be in school. This gets much worse as we get up to higher education level, and we have again seen that the percentage of 1% of refugees going to university has not increased in the past year, despite all of the efforts.
The report notes 92% of all refugees are hosted in developing countries. It says this poses problems because these poor countries have little money to provide quality education for their own children, let alone for refugee children. The UNHCR is urging host countries to enroll refugee children in their national school systems. It says putting these two groups together will result in a better educational result rather than keeping them in separate parallel systems. The agency is calling on the international community to invest in refugee children's education. At the same time, it urges donors to provide sustained financial support to improve the school systems in the developing host countries. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The UN Refugee Agency has expressed concerns over statements and actions it said are forcing refugees to repatriate to Burundi. A Burundian rights group this month released a report saying both the Burundian and Tanzanian governments intimidated and forced refugees to return to their country of origin. Moses Javier Rimana reports from Bujumbura.
According to the Burundian government, more than 100,000 refugees repatriated from Tanzania, Democratic Republic of Congo, and Rwanda since 2016. In a report released by a Burundian civil society organization this month, some of the refugees in a Tanzanian camp were intimidated and forced to return to Burundi. Catherine Weissner is the regional refugee coordinator for the Burundi situation.
UNHCR and partners are concerned about the nature of recent statements and actions encouraging refugees to repatriate to Burundi and the pressure that some refugees do feel to leave Tanzania. To that end, we continue to engage with the government of Tanzania at high levels, working within the framework of the tripartite agreement we've signed with the government of Tanzania and the government of Burundi to reaffirm and ensure that any refugee returns are voluntary and based on a free and informed choice.
In August last year, representatives of Burundian and Tanzanian governments, alongside the UN Refugee Agency, held a tripartite meeting to facilitate voluntary repatriation of Burundian refugees from Tanzania. A report by a Burundian civil society organization said refugees were prohibited from leaving their camps to go outside to make provisions in the surrounding markets and to trade in basic commodities. Terence Nahiraja is the Burundi Assistant Home Affairs Minister. He says the allegations are not true because there were many individuals who weren't happy about the refugee repatriation exercise due to their self-interest. He says many are surprised to see refugees being repatriated in a big number, as it is a sign that Burundi is now peaceful. UN Refugee Agency Regional Coordinator for Burundi Situation, Catherine Weissner, said that the UNHCR is not promoting the refugees' return to Burundi, but that it continues to work with the Burundian and Tanzanian governments to assist those refugees who have expressed interest to be repatriated voluntarily.
In the last year, we have assisted more than 44,000 refugees to voluntarily repatriate to Burundi. The vast majority have been from Tanzania, with smaller numbers having returned from Kenya, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Rwanda. One of the major constraints we are facing is the lack of adequate funding. This has caused us to divert our own scarce resources, financial and staff, from other critical refugee needs, and also led to a significant backlog of refugees in Tanzania who have registered to return and are still waiting for the opportunity to do so.
The last session of the regional mediated dialogue between the Burundian government and the opposition expected to begin next month. Security guarantee of refugees who oppose to the current regime will be among the major topics high on the agenda ahead of the 2020 elections. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
Members of the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS Parliament, will tomorrow, Friday, conclude a week-long meeting in the Liberian capital, Monrovia. The Joint Committee on Communication and Information Technology, Education, Science and Technology, Labor, Employment, Youth, Sports and Culture have been looking at the contribution of information and communications technology in solving the problem of youth unemployment in the sub-region. Representative Edwin Snow of Liberia's Vice Chair for Administration, Finance and Budget of the ECOWAS Parliament. He says the meeting is also looking at the establishment of the first ECOWAS community radio and television station in Liberia.
Over the last few years, a lot of our young people have tried to migrate to Europe, going through the Sahara and the Sahel, and we've been having some issues. So we are trying to see how best we can create jobs in those countries so that the young people will have something to attract them to remain in their commerce and not to try to export their talents through illegal means. And then the cash shortage, as you know, that's not something we all can talk about. It's been very, very devastating.
Why you think this is happening? You think there's no job?
Well, normally people migrate for greener pasture. There are other reasons, but greener pasture is a key component for migration, especially illegal migration. So it's not war. We're not fighting war. So they are going there thinking that they can have life better there. So we believe that if we can create jobs within our own borders, it will cut down on that. So that's something that the head of states are very keen on. They now have instructed the ECOWAS Commission to formulate programs where we can create jobs within our region. So those are some of the issues that have been discussed here at our delocalized meeting. The ECOWAS Parliament represents 300 million citizens in our region. So what touches a citizen in this region touches the ECOWAS Parliament, and we try to make sure that we prevent those kind of things, illegal illegal migration is a major component, it's a major obstacle.
What are those key areas of trying to provide opportunities for young Africans you are deliberating on?
Well, the committees will be doing this report on what can we do, what job can we create. Our key focus is on information technology, where we will be looking at the migration of the Omio radio from Omio to ECOWAS radio.
Olamosino, how important you think these meetings will be in enhancing ICT in the West African sub-region, focusing on broadcasting and communication specifically?
You know, we have a case study in Senegal with the West African Democracy Radio. So now with the ECOWAS radio, we want to make sure that those mistakes or those shortcomings from the West African Democracy Radio wouldn't be repeated. Now, this radio will be the first ECOWAS institution in Liberia. They will be transmitting in three languages, English, French, and Portuguese, along with the television component also. And they will keep you abreast of what's happening in our region. So on a daily basis, the content will change. On a daily basis, you will know exactly what are the situation in Guinea, in Ghana, in Cote d'Ivoire, in Nigeria, and you can name it. So those are issues that we'll be looking at regarding the community radio. It's going to be owned by the community. We're going to have correspondents in all of the countries, and we're going to be reporting exactly as it happens in our region, also to enhance democracy in the region.
Representative Edwin Snow of Liberia's Vice Chair for Administration, Finance and Budget of the ECOWAS Parliament. He spoke with reporter Moses Garziowu in Monrovia. A group of women in Senegal marched through the streets of the capital this month, demanding a cultural shift to end what they say is the prevalence of domestic violence against wives. According to a recent study at Senegal's University of Gothenburg, 60% of Senegalese wives experience some form of violence from their husbands. Binta Sall is the spokesperson for Femme Chic, the group that organized the march. She spoke to Ricky Stryak about the urgent need to end domestic violence.
There was a lady, her name was Kumba, and she is actually 17 years old. So she has been married, and she was really violated by her husband. We cannot bear this no more because there are so many cases that look alike to that case. So we have found a way to help them, and this was the first step. Doing this march was the first step to say, no, that's enough. There is no more beating women in this society.
Are there problems with Senegalese law when it comes to domestic violence? And if there are, what changes would your group like to see?
There is no problem. You know, women are very protected here by the law. The only problem is that they don't know their rights. If you are not well educated, I mean, at school, so there are so many people who don't know their rights and who don't know what to do or what to avoid. You know, so I mean, women are very protected, and there are laws that can bring problems if the husband violates the woman.
According to a study from the University Gothenburg in Saint-Louis in Senegal, it says that there 60% of wives experience some kind of violence from their husband. Is that what you guys have found in your research?
Yeah, that's true. You know, there is what we call, I can say that it is about the culture. The culture has maybe 80% value on this, you know. For example, if you go not in Dakar, it exists in Dakar, but not as it exists in the foreign village.
In the rural areas.
Yeah, in the rural areas. So how can I say, there, being married is something that I can say it is a punishment, you know, because they can live in their marriage, experience suffering, and they do not live at all. They just stay there because their parents, for example, the mom has experienced certain violences in her marriage. So she always says to her daughter, don't ever quit the marriage, don't ever quit your husband. You have to stay, you have to educate your children, and you don't have to bring shame on us. So you have to stay in this marriage, whatever it is.
Binta Sall is the spokesperson for Femme Chic, the group that organized the March Against Domestic Violence in Senegal. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa News. An official says South Sudanese rebel leader Riek Machar has agreed to sign a final peace deal with the government to end the 5-year civil war one day after refusing to do so. Sudanese foreign minister said Wednesday that Machar will sign the agreement today, Thursday, in Khartoum. And that is it for this Thursday, August 30th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, VOA presents a town hall special introducing members of the Mandela Washington Fellows for Young African Leaders Initiative. The 2018 Yali Fellows pledged to continue Nelson Mandela's legacy. Highlighting the Yali Fellows on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.